You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. The Radio Cafe is brought to you in part by Santa Fe County. If you've been looking to go solar in your home, Santa Fe County's Sustainability Office wants you to know that the 30% federal tax incentives are only available until the end of 2019. So if you've been thinking about going solar, now's the time to do it. And if you're not sure where to start, start with Santa Fe County's Office of Sustainability, where you can get a free impartial consultation to help demystify the process and help you calculate upfront just how big a system you might need. Contact them at 992-9832 or visit santafecountynm.gov/publicworks. And the Radio Cafe is also brought to you by Morningstar Senior Living, which is building its newest community on Pacheco Street in Santa Fe. They'll be providing independent living, assisted living, and memory care to make sure that you and your loved ones can live fully and vibrantly in a safe environment. You can reach Morningstar Senior Living at 505-919-7989. That's 505-919-7989, or go to morningstarseniorliving.com and let them know that you heard about it on the Radio Cafe. And by the way, if you'd like to sponsor the Radio Cafe, please contact Henry Lopez. His email is hlopez@sfnewmexican.com. You can reach him at 505-986-3054, or you can go to radiocafe.org and click on New Mexican, and all that info is there. And now to our program. We're going to be talking today about something that I had actually never heard about until now, and it's called lunch shaming. Apparently, there are many children in public schools all over the United States of America whose parents get behind on their payments for school lunches. Then, when their children get to the front of the lunch line, if their account is not in good standing, the lunch workers throw away their hot lunches and milk and give them a cold cheese sandwich. Sometimes the children's arms are stamped with the words, "I need lunch money." In some cases, they're deprived of food altogether. In response to this, New Mexico passed the nation's first law banning lunch shaming, and the effort was spearheaded by Jenny Ramo, who joins us today. She's the executive director of New Mexico Appleseed, an organization dedicated to improving the lives of low-income people in New Mexico. We're also joined by Debriana Mancini, actress and writer, whose one-woman show, The Meatball Chronicles, will be performed at the Santa Fe Center for Spiritual Living on Sunday, May 20th and Monday, May 21st. It's a benefit to bring attention to the issue of lunch shaming. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jenny Ramo, tell us about this phenomenon of lunch shaming and how we got to the point where adults are put in the position of humiliating children and depriving them of food.
So just let me explain a little bit about New Mexico Appleseed. We are a poverty policy organization, so we identify issues in the community that are affecting low-income children and families and keeping them from exiting the cycle of poverty. And I actually started Appleseed in 2009 on this issue, and Albuquerque Public Schools had made national news because they were giving children whose parents owed money to the cafeteria or who didn't have money that day a cheese sandwich. And it turns out to be a national practice of giving children either nothing, making them, if they get in their line, they get their little tray, they go to the cashier, and the cashier says, "I'm sorry, honey, you can't have that. You don't have any money," and they make them throw it out, or stamping their little arms with ink. And I honestly,
the ink that says, "I need lunch money."
Yeah,
I mean, it's like a branding. It's like this. It's like a scarlet letter.
Yeah, and I honestly feel like it didn't start with evil intentions. I think people didn't, you know, the cafeteria used to be a kind of convenience, and like a restaurant. And you know, New Mexico is number two in child hunger. And we've had prolonged problems with food insecurity in our state. And so what ended up happening is that a lot of kids really couldn't pay the bill. And so it meant a lot of kids weren't eating. And a lot of kids' parents are, you know, in chaos and they don't have the money. And what ended up, I think, happening is that the most effective way to get the bill paid was to not give the kids food or to give them the cheese sandwich. And it worked. And I ultimately had just had enough. I had tried every diplomatic path, and the U.S. USDA was requiring that schools have a policy on in writing, and it could be as draconian as they wanted, but they wanted to have a policy in writing by July 2017, and I said, I have had enough, and I just couldn't take another year of picturing little guys getting their lunches thrown out. I mean, kids who reasonably expect when they go to school that the grown-ups are going to take care of them, and they weren't.
There are so many things about this that are unbelievable, shocking, and insane. And one of them is that if a child gets to the end of the lunch line with a tray full of hot food and doesn't have the money to pay for it, they don't put it back, give it to another kid. They throw it in the garbage can. What are we teaching kids about the value of food?
Well, I think more importantly, what are we teaching the kids about the value of them? You know, I mean, that's the problem is what does that say to you when your school already doesn't have supplies and you aren't even worthy of a meal?
No, I know. I mean, that is the huge, there's so many pieces of it that are shocking. And one of them is, okay, let us force children to go hungry or to eat what is clearly like second-class citizen lunch, which is a cold cheese sandwich instead of the hot meal, which they just threw into the garbage can.
Yeah.
But so what happens to these children? I mean, they are literally shamed in front of their peers.
Yeah.
We're talking about 5-year-olds, 10-year-olds, I mean, children in elementary school.
And big kids,
and
too.
And kids, teenagers. Yeah.
People forget the big guys are little too. Mm-hmm. But so what happened was I ended up writing a law saying enough, and we didn't actually have a huge amount of opposition because no one knew it was happening. And even the superintendents, who will have to pay the bill ultimately if parents don't end up paying, went with it. And all we were saying is it's not a free meal. Parents are still responsible for it, but you need to take the child out of the debt collection process. You cannot use the child as a pawn to collect your debt. So we were the first in the country. We wrote it. The governor signed it. The next day it made the cover of the New York Times, went completely viral, CNN, Al Jazeera, you name it, BBC, everything. And now, you know, I don't even know how many districts have and states are banning it. Some of it's Washington State and Oregon just took our language verbatim and made it happen. And it's, you know, it isn't true systems change, but it's taking one paper cut out of these child's, you know, out of the children's lives. I mean, it really is. You know, they don't have to spend any time worrying about whether they're going to eat.
So this was a bill that you and your cohort, your colleagues, basically authored, got passed in New Mexico, the first of its kind in the United States of America, ending lunch shaming.
Correct.
How does this work? For some adults listening to this program who went to public school, we had lunch money in our pockets that we paid at the end. That's not the deal anymore.
It can be. It just totally depends. Every district is different how they do it. Sometimes every school is different. Sometimes, you know, you can put it on credit. Some districts weren't allowing credit. So if you didn't have the money that day, you couldn't get fed. And now we're just taking that all out of the, making sure all of the money part is going through the adults.
The concept of debt collection from parents whose children are going to public school was, that in itself was kind of a foreign concept to me. How does that work? The school bills parents for lunch?
Right. Mm-hmm. So you're either, there are kind of three categories of kids in school. There's kids who are eligible for free meals, who are low income enough to just get free meals. There's a reduced price where you pay a little copay, you know, 40 cents. And then there are kids who are not eligible for anything. In New Mexico, there's not real data on it, but a lot of kids earn $1 more, their parents earn a little bit too much, and they still can't afford food, but they're not eligible for free meals. So those are the kids who are most vulnerable to lunch debt. Those are the kids who are most vulnerable to this debt piling up and them just not being able to eat at school. But it's actually supposed to be a convenience that you don't have to have money that day. You know, it's helping the kids that they can bill it, they can charge it. And what was happening is, you know, they would say, oh, you can charge 10 meals or you can charge no meals. But if at the end of 10 meals you haven't paid, you get the cheese sandwich or you get nothing, or you have to clean the cafeteria before you get fed. And it was effective. I think it made parents pay quickly, but it was cruel.
It is a kind of cruelty. Has anybody been talking to these children and following up on kids? Because it's all over the country, kids who have been lunch shamed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's how we find our work, is we talk to families and children and hear what's going on with them. And
what do they say? What's it like
for
them?
Oh, it's awful. It's awful. And especially, I think it's worse than the parents in some ways. Like, everybody's doing their best. Every parent is trying, and they feel like dogs when their kids came home and, you know, have a stamp or didn't eat. Or I think parents are doing their best, and people don't pay because they can't.
How much does school lunch, a regular hot school lunch, cost?
It depends, $2.50, $3, and you know, people always ask about the quality of the food. And one of the things I think this lunch shaming thing does is really highlight the need for more money funding this food. I mean, not only do we need to improve the quality, but we need to increase the number of kids who are eligible for free meals. I mean, I think the fact that there's a debt just shows we're underinvesting in something really important like nutrition. You know, it's not the convenient cafeteria of the Brady Bunch. For many, it's a soup kitchen, and we need to acknowledge the role of feeding. I mean, it's interesting. My kids go to public school, and when there's testing days, they give you breakfast in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And why would that be? Because kids perform better, and they want them to perform better, so they give them food then. But somehow the rest of the year, it's not something that we invest in.
One of the things that's also so pernicious about this phenomenon is that you are creating, from a really early age, a sense of inequality and actual inequality.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, these kids are seen as the shamed kids. They're the second class citizens. They're getting second class lunches. And then in the afternoon, they're probably going to do a second class job because they're hungry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing, too, is it sets a culture and a tone of justification for treating poor people or people who can't afford, for whatever reason, the fallout of that, the children, in a way that's cruel, and it's okay to do that. You know, it sets that tone.
Yeah.
And so to me, it was, when I read about it, I was just horrified. I didn't remember that ever happening when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And we were poor. We were on food stamps growing up. But I don't think anybody I grew up with even knew we were.
Mm.
You know, that never would have happened where I grew up. So it horrified me. Just knowing the importance, and like the whole embodiment of everything I do is about food and family and the relationship of people to their food, that it was horrifying to me.
It feels like it's kind of like part of the same set of problems that include prison guards abusing prisoners, cops abusing unarmed citizens, so many other forms of cruelty on the part of supposed public servants. And that's kind of part of the larger ethos that we're living in today in the U.S.
Yeah, it's I wish that we were in a different place. It seems we've regressed into cruelty as an okay way to treat people who need, people in need. It's okay to be mean to them or to punish them into being better. I don't know. It just doesn't seem to me to be a way that you're going to help people be better by being cruel to them.
Well, and baked into a lot of the policy are these non-data-informed assumptions that people who are on food stamps or SNAP, as it's called now, don't work because they don't have to. And actually, the data show that most people who are on food stamps work if they can. And people who aren't, it's either some disability or they're in a rural community with no jobs. And so what they do is they send, you know, people who are believe that ultimately aid breeds laziness, is that they send them on these fool's errands. So, you know, that you have to show every 3 months how poor you are, or you have to apply for 24 jobs in 24 months in places that don't have that.
Right.
And there's really just no evidence that support yields laziness. There's just zero data for it. But all of these policies are so punitive and patronizing, and they're just not data informed. You know, I mean, you could kind of say, all right, well, if there was data that showed that food stamps meant people didn't get jobs, then, you know, you might want to think about a different policy, but there's just no data that show that. It's the same thing with guaranteed basic income. People who are given money to spend, they spend it on the right stuff.
Because they have to. It's not like they have it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We grew up on food stamps. My mother always worked.
Mm-hmm.
I worked as soon as I was 15. I went to work in a factory.
Mm.
And my sisters worked. We all babysat. We all turned our money over. We were always working. And we all still do. We've grown up into productive people in society. Mm-hmm. So I can just say from from my own experience that having public assistance helped us. It's called public assistance. It's assisting. Mm. And if we didn't have it, I don't know what we would have done, frankly.
Well, and the idea that food stamps is a generous program is also not true. There was a wonderful young couple here in Santa Fe who made a film called Food Stamped, and they tried to live for something like a week on food stamps, on the money that food stamps, on food that you could have bought with the amount of money that you get on food stamps, and they were dumpster diving.
Mm-hmm. Well, the S in SNAP is supplemental. It's supposed to supplement. You know, it's not supposed to be the whole thing.
Yeah.
So this whole phenomenon of lunch shaming has ended in New Mexico thanks to some forward-looking people, including you, Jenny Ramo, but also a legislator who had had public assistance as a child. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Our sponsor had a tough life, and he took him a little while, but he agreed to sponsor the lunch shaming bill. And
And Michelle Lujan Grisham is working to try and end it nationwide, along with Tom Udall. I think they both are trying to pass a bill.
So we wrote the federal law. So Appleseed, once we passed it here, wrote a federal bill and said, let's stop New Mexico being last at the hoof. Let's be the leaders in this, and let's try and do this federally. And the federal bill isn't quite as powerful. It doesn't guarantee a meal. It doesn't, but it does say you can't shame them, and it is aspirational.
One of the things that's also kind of weird about this is that school districts aren't allowed to use federal funding to supplement people who can't afford school lunches.
Well, there are things they can do and they can't do. What they can do is eliminate reduced price copays with the school food funds. They can't take on, there are two different bank accounts, basically. The school food authority is one bank account and the rest of the school is the rest of the bank account. And what they said, you can't cover bad debt with school food authority money, but the school itself can.
And some people have done like GoFundMe campaigns. There are different things that I think there was a Jewish coalition that set up to help people pay for their school lunches. I mean, people are doing things to try and get around and help people who don't have the funds to pay even the reduced fee or to pay off school debt, like Philando Castile, the lunch worker who was shot. He was a school cafeteria worker who often paid for the kids' lunches. They set up a fund in his name to help relieve school debt in St. Paul. So people are doing things to try and get around the system and help the system work better. But it's going to take all of us, I think.
Well, and one of the things that's important to note is the school cafeteria workers are not at fault. I mean, they get fired. These are their little guys. I mean, those are their kids, you know, that are missing meals and unable to pay. And I think this is a big heartbreak for frontline workers who just want to help those kids. Like
they get fired if they help
them. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a story from Pennsylvania of a cafeteria worker who gave children hot food when they couldn't afford it and lost her job.
Yeah.
I have a friend who was a teacher in Texas and had to secretly pay because if she had gotten caught, she would have lost her job.
Mm. You're listening to the Radio Cafe. And we're just going to take a quick break to tell you that the Radio Cafe is brought to you by the City of Santa Fe Water Conservation. We've had a warm winter with lots of beautiful blue skies, but very little moisture, and the city is calling on its residents to renew our water conservation efforts. You can visit facebook.com/savewatersantafe to take the new online water quiz and learn how to save water and contribute long-term to keeping Santa Fe green and healthy. You'll also find out how to earn hundreds and even thousands of dollars by making your home and workplace more water-wise. Once again, that's facebook.com/savewatersantafe. And now back to our program. So the context for all of this is child poverty and also underfunding of the schools. So again, for those of us who went to public school during the results of the Lyndon Johnson Administration Great Society programs, where schools were really an important part of educating citizens to have a proper society, we had, you know, drama and...
My public high school, where I went to high school, we had a planetarium. We had a field hockey field, a football field, a practice football field, an Olympic-sized swimming pool. We had tech programs for kids who wanted to do photography, and we had computers and home ec that was fully, you know, sewing machines and stoves, and that was my public school.
Yeah.
But where I grew up, we had very high property taxes, and also we had toll roads, and all those, you know, taxes went to pay for those benefits that we reaped. We were educated populace that came out of there. I don't think that that's the case even where I grew up anymore, that our school is that stellar, because we keep lowering taxes, and taxes are there for a reason. And that's one of the reasons.
Yeah. And that's the other thing when people talk about, oh, my tax bill just got lower. What else is failing?
Lower. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, children's eating and some basic education services. So you, Jenny, accomplished getting lunch shaming banned in New Mexico. So how does it actually work now in New Mexico?
So now the children have to get the meal, and then each district has a multitude of tools they can use to collect the debt. It is certainly not a perfect system, but we have eliminated one problem in the system. I think school debt has probably gone up. What you hope is that at the end of the year, it isn't terrible. I know APS's debt has increased, and it's hard. The whole thing is a hard problem. It is complicated, and you know, you worry that parents are going to end up with a debt they ultimately can't pay, that it's going to pile up. And parents are already making terrible choices between heating and, you know, food and
doctors.
Rent and doctors. And what we tried to do was eliminate this one problem that needed to end. And this certainly does not and all of the problems. I think what we'd ultimately like to do is increase state funding for school meals, whether that looks like just giving everyone, you know, giving each an extra dollar per meal or an extra 50 cents per meal, so that the schools are a little bit in a little bit better position to absorb the debt.
Do kids still bring their lunches to school in a lunchbox or a brown bag?
Yeah, I mean, I think parents have the ability to do that. I think a lot of families are incredibly chaotic. One of the things Appleseed did, another first in the country, was we wrote the very first breakfast after the bell law that requires all high-poverty elementary schools to serve breakfast in the classroom. And the point of that is that, you know, a lot of these parents are getting up at 5 in the morning to go be nurses and construction workers and bus drivers and big sisters bringing them to school or grandma, and they don't have the means, and their life is so chaotic that kids just need to eat. I mean, even in our house, it's hard to get your kids to eat before school. And so the idea that everyone does better on the full tummy is true whether or not your family's living in a lot of chaos or your family's doing just fine. It's just a struggle to, you know, get it all together.
Yeah. As probably any one of us knows, mm-hmm. and our significant others know too, when we're hungry,
yeah.
nothing goes well.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And that was the logic that came to me. I'm looking at it going, well, geez, how do you expect kids to learn? We all know what it's like when we're hungry,
yeah.
that you can't focus.
Yeah.
And anybody who's living and breathing knows that.
Well, and if you're worried about in all morning, you're just waiting for that cheese sandwich and that moment of embarrassment. And, yeah. and that's the kind of stuff we wanted to eliminate, was just the
worry. Anxiety of that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 How did you, Debriana, get awakened to this issue?
I read about it. I think it was a New York Times article that I saw, and I was like, what is this? And it literally, I was at work reading something online, and I started crying. I was like, How could this be happening? And why would people shame children? Like I said, I grew up in a poor family, but we weren't shamed. Personally, you know, if my mother didn't pay the car payment, they didn't come after the children.
Right.
You know, and we had plenty of embarrassment around being poor, but they didn't personally pull out the children and shame the children. And this felt really personal to mm-hmm. me, having had a lot of that experience growing up. So I thought, well, there's not a lot I can do in the world except, you know, be an activist. And since my show is largely about food and family and what it was like to grow up in a family that was very food centric, like many cultures are, I thought, well, this is a way that I can kind of jump off that platform and just raise some awareness wherever I'm performing this particular show to talk about why we shouldn't do this and what you can do if you're in a community that still hasn't done anything about it or help promote the national bill to end it.
The show is called The Meatball Chronicles, and it is being performed at the Santa Fe Center for Spiritual Living on Sunday and Monday, the 20th and 21st of May. And I saw this show when you just brought it out for the first time, mm-hmm. and you've been touring the country with mm-hmm. it. And it's a really kind of profound and vulnerable and interesting one-woman show that's very autobiographical mm-hmm. about your own experience growing up as you did in a colorful, difficult, interesting family with a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. And it's so much about food and mm-hmm. it's so much about the place of food in our lives and the charged meaning of food. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful show, ladies and gentlemen. You should just definitely go see it. But these two shows are a fundraiser to end lunch shaming.
Or to raise awareness about it. It's mm-hmm. to raise awareness about who is doing what to help end it on a nationwide basis.
And so what's going on? I was reading that Louisiana had a bill and it failed. Massachusetts is considering
Boston
a bill.
Boston is. I just saw yesterday.
Yeah.
Boston's trying to do something.
So this is really a state-by-state thing. And there's also federal legislation. Like, how do you see the big picture, Jenny?
So I think until we, it's hard to get laws passed that are as robust as ours, though it has happened. It is very interesting because since we originated the bill in the first place, we get calls from all the states asking for technical assistance. How did you do it? What was the messaging? And so we have a lot of TA on it. Louisiana, actually my colleague at Louisiana Appleseed tried to do it. And what was interesting, which really isn't true, is that they were saying that they were receiving fewer meal applications and they were blaming it on the fact that the kids' families were like, oh no, we don't have to do this anymore. What actually is happening is that because of the Trump administration's positions on immigration is that kids who are immigrants are afraid to apply for meals, and it has absolutely nothing to do with lunch shaming. But that notion killed the bill in Louisiana.
What about other states? Massachusetts is considering it. How many states have passed anti-lunch shaming bills?
I would say 6 or 7 states have passed it, and then a bunch of districts. So you can, district level, since the USDA was requiring a policy from districts anyway, they just passed a more protective policy. But Texas did one. I think Colorado may have done one. Oregon did one. Washington.
California's done something, right?
California did do one, and only a handful. I think Oregon and Washington are the ones who ensure that children got meals. The rest of them said you can't hand a bill to a child at lunch, you can't stamp their hands, you can't make them clean, all important. The difference between ours and theirs is that our kids are going to get fed no matter what.
So some of the bills that are a little weaker say we won't shame them, but we won't feed them either.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And yeah. It's a hard problem. I mean, honestly, it is a very difficult problem. Truly, it is. In my world, you feed children, but I also understand that
there's financial repercussions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
schools have budgets, mm-hmm. but I don't understand. I often ask why we have these school buildings mm-hmm. if we aren't giving kids the basic. Why we're spending billions and billions of dollars on schools if we aren't even feeding them? That seems to be a pretty fair thing that you would argue would.
Well,
be
you
first.
Know, there's so many things, so many questions around that. Why do we have these buildings that we send our kids to school in that don't have proper textbooks, that don't mm-hmm. have toilet paper,
yeah.
that the teachers
basics.
Have to buy supplies? I mean, that didn't happen when I was growing up either.
Yeah.
So when I look at that and I think, well, that didn't happen when I was growing up, so it should be able to continue to happen.
Yeah.
It should have gotten better, not worse.
Yeah.
What is the domino, the linchpin that started that whole downward spiral? That doesn't allow kids to have proper textbooks, school lunches, toilet paper in schools. What happened? We're America. What happened?
Well, I think, I mean, you know as well as I do that there was a period when some of our listeners weren't born yet and some of us remember it, where the President of the United States said, government can't solve your problems. Government is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole denigration of the public sector, of public service, of the high quality and integrity of public servants has been a real struggle to maintain, and mm-hmm. in many ways hasn't been maintained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also not paying teachers enough so you don't get people of quality that want to go into that profession. They go where they're going to make money.
And there are also some big questions about charter schools, and we did a whole entire program on that. So, ladies and gentlemen, you can go to radiocafe.org and find that program with Diane Ravitch, which is a really interesting set of issues that are a little bit outside the purview of this conversation, but the problem of for-profit mm-hmm. charter schools mm-hmm. draining money from the very kinds of public schools that we're talking about that don't have enough money to meet their cafeteria budgets.
Yeah.
If people are interested in getting involved in this issue, I mean, here in New Mexico, where we are speaking, we have fixed that part of the issue, as you said, Jenny. But there's still a lot going on in the same general area, child poverty, all poverty. Yeah. How can people get involved?
Well, New Mexico Appleseed needs your support, whether it's donations or pro bono assistance. They can go to nmappleseed.org and donate and read. And we have some really interesting stuff coming up in the legislative session for 2019 that is transformational. For those of you who are Santa Fe, New Mexican readers or Albuquerque Journal readers, there was just a piece Sunday and then one in Albuquerque Journal on Monday about our work connecting child maltreatment with housing issues. Housing is everything for children. And when you don't have it, it means a whole lot of negative outcomes. So Appleseed is just busy working at all the interrelated issues that come with poverty, housing, child maltreatment, hunger, and educational issues, and how we can have real systems change to make it more fair for the lowest incomes kids to and help them lift themselves out of poverty.
And Debriana Mancini, tell us just a little bit more about your show, The Meatball Chronicles. It started here. It's been all over the country. What kind of reception have you been getting?
I've been getting great reception. I think the idea I had when I wrote it was to try and transcend my own personal story, which it's, of course, it's based on, so that everyone who had a family who ate could understand. Mm. So even though I grew up in an immigrant family that was Italian, and Italian, everyone knows Italians are about food, but a lot of cultures are, Hispanic cultures, Asian cultures. And so I've had a lot of really great reception from people who come from those cultures who really understood what I was talking about when, you know, how food permeates and resonates in your being from the time you're a child to the time you're an adult. And it centers around my family's recipe for a meatball, and each component of the meatball has a story attached to it. And I always say it all comes together at the end like a meatball. So these two shows in Santa Fe, I've decided to use as fundraisers for New Mexico Appleseed, and also to help Michelle Grisham become the governor, because she's focused on those issues too.
Jenny Ramo is Executive Director of New Mexico Appleseed. They're on the web at nmappleseed.org. Debriana Mancini is an actress and writer, and once again, her show, The Meatball Chronicles, is being performed at the Center for Spiritual Living here in Santa Fe on Sunday, May 20th at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and Monday, May 21st at 7 in the evening.
Yes, and you can get tickets for the show at Jean Cocteau. The Jean Cocteau is hosting it, and they will be able to sell you tickets. But also there's a VIP party afterwards where you can use your funds to donate more to the organization, and you can get those tickets at ticketleap.com if you'd like to attend the after party and see the show. That's where you can get those tickets.
Jenny and Debriana, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to The Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. This program is brought to you in part by Dotfoil Computer Services, providing computer repair and business services for Apple and PC. They're Santa Fe's only Apple-authorized service provider. You can find them on the web at dotfoil.com and in the Candyman Center in Santa Fe. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of The Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.